For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Badlands podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiseled and is proudly part of the Chairshot Media Group, and now is also available on Smark to Death Radio. I am Mags, and keeping up this form of rocking up to shows, my course is now, 7 weeks without missing a beat. It's Mr. Paul Talley, the rain counter himself. Paul, how are you this evening?
I thought last week was going to be the end of the run because I was suffering with heat exhaustion after last week. But it's a lot cooler now, so I'm happy.
Yeah, it was brutal last week. I had to turn my fan off in the room because you could pick it up on the Skype audio. Oh, I was sweating so bad.
Did you say I had a towel? Yeah, I was toweling down between things. How are you, man?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, it's been a lot cooler this week, so I've been a lot less grumpy. But yeah, been a decent enough week. Pre-ordered my Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 remaster, so I'm a happy boy. Wow.
I didn't even know that was coming. That sounds exciting.
4th of September.
Awesome. But PS4.
Yeah, and Xbox, I think.
Wow.
But let's get into today's show, and we've got a guest who I've become really quite friendly with in the wrestling Twitter DMs. We're in a group where we kind of like help boost each other's content and profiles. And the guy we speak to today has got his own wrestling website where he puts up his blogs and reviews, and he's even started doing audio now. So yeah, he's a cat with multi talents. It's Mark Charlotte. Mark, how are you?
Hey guys, I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. Yeah, we met through Headlock Talk. Headlock Talk is they've been supporting me for a while. I've been supporting them, so they started like a group with a bunch of people doing podcasts and doing like me doing blogs and stuff. And yeah, we kind of like hit it off with everybody in there.
Yeah, so it's a cool little group.
Yeah,
very supportive.
Yeah, for sure.
So what was what was the thoughts about starting the blog and then obviously like breaking out into audio?
Well, I mean, for me, it was just some kind of outlet for me to talk about wrestling. I mean, that's the one thing like that I think that I'm the most passionate about, and just wanting an outlet, I guess, to talk about it. And yeah, it was just something that I wanted to do for the longest time. And like, I mean, down the line, I do plan to do a podcast. I'm working on it right now, but because I'm waiting for a friend to do it with me. He just doesn't have, he's not prepared. So we're not announcing anything yet, but we're working on it.
Well, if you ever need any like help, advice, or guests, definitely hit us up. We're always willing to lend a hand. Well,
Matt Mags would be great advice for a partner who's unprepared.
Yeah, because I work with one every single week. So where can people find your content? What's your website?
My website is MikeJCOnWrestling.com. Okay. And I also just started contributing for, Single
STLD,
Leg?
STLD, yeah.
Yeah, STLDWrestling.com. I'm doing the features over there for AEW Dynamite.
Yeah, and so, another a guest who we've had on before, Simon Powell, does some stuff for them. So, yeah, you Yeah, you're doing really well. Really, really exciting to see you like entering the content world. But let's get on to some Badlands. As you've never been on the show before, we like to get the guests, Matt Rushmore of the greatest wrestler of all time, so Mr. Tolly can get his one job out and add him to our collated Matt Rushmore. So who were the four wrestlers who kind of make your Matt Rushmore, and why each one makes the cut?
All right. So for me, I grew up in the Attitude Era, obviously. So like I'm a 90s kid. So it's very, very kind of Attitude Era centric, but I think everybody on there is very well deserving and probably are like my four favorite wrestlers of all time. So we got number one is Undertaker. Mm-hmm. Probably, you know, the greatest gimmick of all time, one of the most entertaining personalities in WWE history. Second, Shawn Michaels, probably one of the best overall workers of all time, I people would argue. Third is Chris Jericho, very much on the same vein as Shawn Michaels. It's one of the best workers, characters, all around talents. And number four is Mick Foley. And that one is Mick Foley is kind of a close to the heart pick for me. I've always kind of like, I mean, people kind of give hardcore wrestling a hard time, but he always just like put his body on the line for the sake of the fans. And he's also from my neck of the woods, Long Island, New York. So like I've just always been a Mick Foley guy.
Yeah, absolutely deserves it. I don't think he's got that much love from the previous guest, but yeah, he absolutely deserves to be in that conversation.
That takes him to four votes he's had, along with the likes of Kenny Omega, Randy Savage, Eddie Guerrero, Dusty Rhodes, and CM Punk.
So he's in esteemed company there, though.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Punk.
Yeah.
Let's not go there.
But if you get a chance to listen back to last week's episode, you've actually put the cat amongst the pigeons again with your picks, because there's an ongoing battle against the two guys involved in the Montreal Screwjob, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, and you've just weighed in with a Shawn Michaels vote. So how is that battle looking, Paul?
So Michaels is two up on Bret now.
Oh.
13 plays 11. I mean, Shawn Michaels actually starting the creep up on the lead-in pack.
He's had quite a lot of votes recently.
Yeah, it wasn't looking likely at all up until this point. And your vote for Undertaker has taken him within one of the precious fourth place. He's within one of Hulk Hogan now.
Okay. So yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, go on. It's fine.
No, I was just gonna say the Undertaker. I was just going to further boost the Undertaker. I just love him. He's the best.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. He is by far the greatest gimmick that there's ever been in wrestling.
Absolutely. We've got our theory that the Undertaker got a lot of votes when he appeared to be retired. Then he came back and the votes dried up. And now he's retired again. He's getting votes again. So I think we're spot on with our Undertaker theory.
You know what it is with the Undertaker is I think a lot of people started to see the talent in his like 2006 to like 2010 run where he was having like hella good matches. Like, because a lot of times in the Attitude Era and earlier eras, he was kind of being portrayed as the guy who was like the big guy who has to work with the attractions and not really getting to have good matches. I mean, like, he was starting to have good matches in the Attitude Era, 98-99 era, but then when like his second run as the Dead Man and like all those matches with Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Ric Flair, you know, all those guys, Kurt Angle, he had great matches with Kurt Angle. Like, that was his like era of like really showcasing his in-ring ability.
Yeah, and I think it kind of speaks to to Mark Calaway as a wrestler that he was able to kind of move with the times. He knew exactly what WWE wanted from him in the 90s all the way into the 2000s, and he's been able to kind of like change his wrestling style to keep up with the younger, fresher, arguably more talented wrestlers.
Yeah, and I mean, like, he even joked in like recent interviews, since he's doing a lot of interviews now since he's more open and stuff, but he even joked in recent interviews that, like, as he got older, he did more, instead of where most people, as they get older, they do less. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And I suppose with having, like, the kind of schedule that he had, he was able to put more effort in the few matches that he had than if he was working week on week every single show.
Well, yeah, especially since the last decade, 2010 is when he started doing the part-time, so the last decade has been literally him only really working like two to five matches a year.
Yeah, exactly. Which
has really obviously played a factor in his longevity.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's brought his mystique back as well. When he went to part-time, and kind of was only appearing, you know, four times a year, and you'd really have to wait for that gong to sound.
Well, yeah, and it's also just really like unexpected. Like, when you don't know the Undertaker is appearing, and he like appears at like a anniversary show or something, like when they do like the Raw 25th or whatever it is, and he just appears randomly, and you don't know he's appearing, and he just like gives Elias a chokeslam or something. That's special.
Exactly. Like, yeah, that's the best Undertaker.
Yeah.
It kind of ruins it, though, when they advertise him 2 weeks beforehand just to kind of pop the ratings.
Exactly.
So how is the Mount Rushmore collated, Paul? Have we seen any change in the top four?
No, well, the top four didn't get any votes tonight. So, you know, you Ric Flair on 31, The Rock and Steve Austin both on 28, and Hulk Hogan on 21. Like I said, the interesting thing here was The Undertaker catching up on 20, Chris Jericho catching up now on 17, and Shawn Michaels on 13.
Mm, very, very interesting. We thought we'd probably have to kind of restart it with a massive breakaway pack, but they kind of been pulled back in.
Yeah, they are. I've got a feeling Shawn Michaels is going to catch him, because Hulk Hogan gets less votes because of why. We've got our theory that the Undertaker votes are tailed off, so I think Shawn Michaels might be an outsider for that top four.
Especially now he's involved in the Randy Orton story, and it's kind of like recency bias almost.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's your boy Rance, aka Ray Cash of the Outsider's Edge. I'm here with my boy Kyle, and I got a question for you, man.
All right, shoot.
What would you say are your four worst, your Mount Rushmore of worst edge guests?
Ooh, that's a tough one. The Mount Rushmore of worst edge guests.
It's pretty easy. It should just be two people.
I mean, nah. The three worst guests in the history of the Outsider's Edge are obviously Caleb, Carl, and Mags, right?
Well, I mean, Darren's trash. You know, Darren, and we can't even shout out Paul Talley because he's never been on the damn show.
I mean, but that's good for us.
Speaking of Mount Rushmore, I guess we can shout out the fact that Badlands Podcast, part of the Chairshot Radio Network, check it out. We love the show. Always listen, man. Chairshot family, we're here for you.
100%. If y'all haven't checked it out, you got to do it. And I mean, if Darren were here, we know one thing he would say to my Mount Rushmore, and that is he has a
he big would veto that shit.
Fat veto for that shit. But he's not here, so I said what I said. You want to come on the show and defend yourself, you know where to find your boys.
If you don't like that, we don't give up.
Fuck. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out the Chair Shot.
Oh, well, let's get into this main topic then. And Matt, we decided for you to have the main topic of wrestlers who have been a world champion in more than one promotion. Now, obviously, the caveat was you couldn't just have it in your local kind of a backyard promotion because anyone's a world champion. I dare say I've been a world champion multiple times in some sort of backyard wrestling company. But yeah, so major companies. So who did you go with first for wrestlers who have been multi-promotional world champions?
All right, so I actually did some research for this. Like, I was like,
so more than Paul then. You had to do more than Paul.
I like legitimately did research for this because obviously I had some names in my head, but I also like wanted to like think about combined days as champion. I wanted to think about number of reigns. I wanted to think about, because I didn't want to just be like, put my four favorites that have been champions in other places. Like, I wanted it to mean something, you know? So I, obviously number one, I think Ric Flair, obviously. I mean, I feel like everybody's probably going to put Ric Flair on that list. I mean, the number of championships that he has is unknown to this point. I mean, they tell you 16 on WWE, but it's really like 25 or something compared. If you think about like NWA and then like the parts of NWA that like broke off, like Mid-Atlantic and like WWE, he only had two reigns, but like he's the best champion of all time. Like, how, you know, you have to put, I feel like he has to be on that list.
Yeah, it's an absolutely solid pick. And when I was thinking of the topic, there was him and his Mount Rushmore teammate Hulk Hogan, who instantly sprung to mind. They're the two guys who you can say were the pinnacle of many promotions wrestling. So yeah, it's an absolutely solid pick.
And you already mentioned my number two, which was Hulk Hogan.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to your number three first. Paul.
Yes.
It's you to go first, I believe, this week, sir.
It is, yeah. And you've already mentioned my number one. It's Hulk Hogan.
It's the segues here.
Wow. Thanks for teaming up there, Mike.
This is not planned.
So what is it about Hogan that made him your number one pick, Paul?
Well, like Mike, you'll find this hard to believe. I've done some research as well. And, wow. And I estimate that Hulk Hogan was a world champion somewhere up for 30% of his career in terms of days, which I think is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. I don't many people, maybe Brock Lesnar might have a number similar to that, but 30% of your career as world champion is pretty outstanding.
With the length of career that he's had.
Yeah, exactly. You've said it there. It's six WWE World Championships spanning from 1984 to 2002, which is just a mammoth period of time. His first WWE title reign, which began in 1984, was the second longest in history. 1,474 days. He's got the longest championship reign in WCW history, where again he won six championships. Not quite as long there, 469 days. They obviously moved the title around a bit more in WCW. Crucially for me, you know, I'm a big Japan fan, and when I was looking at this, I wanted to see champions on other continents as well. So yeah, crucially, Hulk Hogan also held the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, albeit the original version that only he and Antonio Inoki ever won. So when you talk about esteemed company, it don't get much more esteemed than that. But when you think Hulk Hogan, you think about him being world champion. He's the most recognizable professional wrestler of all time, I think. WCW is one of the greatest heel turns of all time. He main evented Starrcade three times. He main evented WrestleMania eight times, and like pretty much nine because his match with The Rock at WrestleMania 18 was the main event, really, wasn't it? If we're being honest, that match in itself against The Rock, probably, in my opinion, only rivaled by The Rock and John Cena in terms of star power.
Maybe.
Yeah, and I don't think The Rock and Cena. I think The Rock and Hogan is the is the biggest match. I think it's the biggest match of all time, personally.
Flair versus Michaels, I would have said.
No, but in terms of, for wrestling fans, I think.
Yeah, I get what you mean. The atmosphere was electric.
Yeah. I think it had a wider impact, Rock and Hogan. He won Hulk Hogan's list of accolades is endless. He won the PWI match of the year twice, 17 years apart, again, for that Rock match. He was number one in the PWI top 500 wrestlers 12 years apart. So in terms of kind of longevity, distance between the titles he won, the kind of the combined reigns of the titles he won, I couldn't look, and the fact he did it, albeit briefly, in Japan as well as America, I had to pick Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, for a long, long time, if you were a WWF fan, he was Mr. Wrestling. Simple as that.
Definitely. I mean, he was everything about wrestling when I first got into it. I was a Hulkamaniac, so
I can't fault the pick, but I can veto it, and I will veto it.
Well, on what grounds can you veto Hulk Hogan?
Because he's racist.
Well,
I've got a counter that.
Go for it. I'm still vetoing it, no matter what you counter.
I don't think Hulk Hogan's a racist. I think Terry Bolly is a racist. Hulk Hogan is perfection, isn't he? The character.
Is this the old Hulk Hogan's got a 10-inch penis, terrible age, got a 6-inch penis argument?
you said it before I could.
I'm sticking with my guns this week. You're not talking me round. I am going to veto Hulk Hogan, and I'm actually going to replace him with someone who was his nemesis for a long, long time, and he was also the nemesis for Mark's first pick. I'm replacing him with Sting. So Sting, he captured his first ever world title when he won the NWA World Heavyweight Championship in July of 1990. He held on to that belt for about 6 months. And then when WCW and NWA kind of split and WCW established their own title, he was the third ever WCW World Heavyweight Champion. And he went on another near six-month reign. And then he picked up a third reign with that title in early 1993, but that one would only last 6 days. And then he'd gone 4 years without actually winning the title before. Obviously, he defeated Hulk Hogan at Starrcade 1997. He would eventually finish his WCW career as a six-time world champion. But his first reign was actually longer than all of the other five combined. But
none were as long as Hogan's, right?
Well, nobody, apart from probably Bruno Sammartino, was as long as Hogan's. Hogan's had 10 years as champion.
Yeah.
So after WCW folded, people were expecting Sting to go over to the WWF, but he didn't. And he kind of just sat out his contract and faded away into the wilderness, and then popped up in TNA. And then he recaptured the NWA World Heavyweight Championship whilst there, the first time in 16 years when he won it in October of 2016. Another short run, he only had it four times. But after TNA severed ties with the NWA and formed their own title, they actually became a four-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion. So this guy's crossed multiple promotions and become world champion. And as well as these titles, he was also a two-time WCW International World Heavyweight Champion, and he was also the WWA World Heavyweight Champion. So, yeah, I'm going to replace Hulk Hogan with the franchise Sting.
It's a terrible veto. I can't do anything about it. It's a terrible veto. I'll just take you back to the cornerstone of our podcast, the Mount Rushmore, and Hogan's got four times as many votes as Sting. So
then maybe it's time we showed a bit of love to Sting. Then Hogan gets enough accomplishments on this show for any racist.
I mean, Hogan, like, what, 2,100 days combined as WWE champion. And 1,100 combined days as WCW champion. that's pretty crazy. Not everybody could. I don't think anybody else could say that.
No, I absolutely
nobody
agree.
Can say it. Yeah, nobody can say it.
I'm only vetoing Paul because I like to veto him. It's just the funnest part of the show. But I also know that Hogan is going to get some love on Max Mount Rushmore, so he's technically still involved.
Well, I mean, there's not much more I could say about Hulk Hogan. He kind of said it all. I mean, if you want to count his, like, what, his Royal Rumble wins that meant nothing, his...
don't forget his infamous WrestleMania 9 win where he wasn't even involved in the title match and still walked out as the champion.
Yeah.
No, yeah, to be fair, if you separate the man from the character, Hogan, he was wrestling. He has to be involved. I just know that I can veto Paul. So I get why Paul brought him up. But, yeah, he's not staying ours.
My whole thing with Hogan has always been, like, he's not a great wrestler. He's just a couple of moves and a lot of fanfare, which is fine. But if you watch, like, his New Japan stuff, he was working, like, hard. Like, he had like, some great matches in New Japan. And in All Japan, I believe, like, a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it that's kind of like why I feel like people kind of give Hogan, like, especially people from my era who grew up, especially like the Ruthless Aggression era where things started to be more about wrestling, and people, like, especially people who, like, love Kurt Angle and stuff like that, they're like, it's very hard for people to see Hulk Hogan as a top guy because of his in-ring work in WWE.
Yeah. But he was he was too old at that point to prove it. New Japan, he did prove it. Yeah. And I always see Hulk Hogan as, he was a good wrestler, but he just didn't need to be. So, similar way I see you mentioned it about The Undertaker there. He never really, for at least a decade, had to prove that he was a good wrestler. Brock Lesnar now doesn't have to prove he's a good wrestler, because that's not what he's out there to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, if it's exactly what is needed from a champion, it's not about who was the best wrestler, it's about who could shift the most tickets, who could shift the most sales, and Hogan was an expert at that, simple as that.
Yep.
So with you having Hogan as your second pick, it's back to us for ours, and it's my choice, and I'm sure this is going to get vetoed. So do I play political and stick up someone who I know is going to veto, or do I put on someone who I really like and just get angry because Paul's vetoed him off? I'm not daft. I'm going for the one that I know is going to get vetoed. So I'm going with...
Dangerous Game.
Double J. Jeff Jarrett.
Jeff Jarrett.
Did you know Jeff Jarrett is an 11-time World Heavyweight Champion?
I actually did, because I, like I said, did a lot of research for this.
So this guy, after flip-flopping between WWF and WCW quite a few times, he returned to WCW in 1999, October 1999, and that's he captured his first WCW World Heavyweight title about 6 months later. Ultimately, he would end up being a four-time WCW champion, but he had very, very short runs. I think his longest run was about 40 days. Then after the collapse of WCW and the very infamous public slating that he got from Vince McMahon, where he was basically told on live TV he was not getting rehired, he went away and formed his own company with his dad, Jerry. He formed TNA. And he would hold the NWA world title 6 times between 2002 and 2006. And again, when TNA cut their ties with the National Wrestling Alliance, in TNA, I think he was the longest reign that he had was over 100 days. So he ended up being like, he booked himself as a stronger champion than he was in WCW.
Shocking.
Yeah, exactly. But that wasn't the end of his world title reigns. He actually captured his last world title when he lifted the AAA World Championship in Mexico. I think that was in June 2011. And he's actually holds the record for the longest reign in that title's history, 274 days. So yeah, I'm gonna go with the over 1,000 days world champion, Jeff Jarrett.
You sold it to me, yeah. Just leave him on there.
you actually leaving him on?
Yeah.
You are making a mockery of this.
No, you put him forward. You put him.
You put him over too well.
Let's veto it. Let's veto it.
Oh, I've wrote it down now.
I couldn't. Right, let's take him off. Let's stick with Impact or TNA, and let's put AJ Styles up there. Because AJ Styles has been a great world champion in TNA, where I think he really brought a lot of eyes to the TNA product in the mid-noughties. I think a lot of people tuned in to see what all the fuss about AJ Styles was about. His matches with Samoa Joe and Christopher Daniels are legendary. While in TNA, he was a two-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion. A two-time TNA World Champion and a three-time NWA World Champion, so five-time champion in Impact. He was the inaugural X Division Champion, of course, and again did a lot to kind of make that division something special that people tuned in for. I remember TNA was a lot of WWE cast-offs, really, at that time, particularly the main event scene. But here, he was. Having not made his name in WWE at all, I think he had a brief trial period there and got offered a contract, which he turned down because he thought it was best for his family at that time. So he was there basically making his name on the indies and TNA. So that was impressive. Obviously, he then went to New Japan. Again, a two-time IWGP Heavyweight Champion, which always scores highly with me on these Rushmores. I believe he won the IWGP Championship in his first match, which is impressive. And then I honestly never thought AJ Styles would sign for WWE. I thought maybe the ship had sailed. I thought maybe for whatever reason Vince wasn't interested in him. But not only did he sign for WWE, he lit it on fire, and he became a WWE champion. Again, a very special WWE championship win for us, because it took place in England, which again I think was a first ever for a WWE title change to happen outside of America or Canada, I think. Certainly the first time it's happened in England, and went on a fantastic title reign, lasted over a year. Fantastic matches. He was by far the best wrestler in WWE at that time, or certainly the form wrestler in WWE at that time. And you know, he's still going strong, as we've seen WrestleMania. It looks as though he's responsible for The Undertaker's final ever match, which is a pretty neat bit of history to make.
And if it is his final match, what a way to for The Undertaker to go out, because it was so well done.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's won titles in TNA, New Japan, WWE. I don't think it's big enough to count here, but he won the PWG World Championship. In England, he won the Rev Pro British Championship. He's won titles all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to replace Jeff Jarrett respectfully with AJ Styles.
See, the veto takeaway and the veto give.
I have to say, this is what I love about this show, because I didn't even think of AJ Styles when I was compiling my shortlist. It's only when I would go into the research, I think, oh my God, of course AJ Styles is one of the best.
See, when I was Sorry, when I was going into like my research for this, like I almost didn't want to put him on because he's actually my number four. So I'm actually gonna have a new number four now.
Because I keep stealing your picks. Sorry,
you by all means, yeah. You can use him.
Well, no, I got another one. But yeah, like at first I didn't want to guess he's done a lot, and I was like, but like, and I, like I said, I was thinking about like combined days as champion, and especially in like New Japan. He doesn't have a lot. He only had the belt twice and defended it three times total. So it's like, that's why at first I didn't want to put him on my list, but it was like, I think I got to put at least one favorite on there. Like, you know,
I think that's a fair point. I think if you do like a combined reigns, he won't feature highly on lists. You're right.
Yeah.
But I just think for the range of places he's won. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
titles, I think it's impressive.
His WWE title reigns alone have been very impressive for this era. Like, combined days as champion and only two reigns, 511 days, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And the fact that Gedo and the booking team at New Japan were so confident in him that they put the title on him straight away, and then Vince and his booking team were so confident in him that they put the title on him for a full year, especially in this era where champions are hot potatoed like nobody's business. It just goes to show the mark of how good of a wrestler and how dependable he is.
Yeah. I didn't think AJ Styles would make it in WWE. Not for his own talent. I just didn't think. I thought he was another one for the warehouse.
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's interesting that Vince has come out and said he wished he signed him a decade ago.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
Well, it's because his talent is undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it like. That I wish that was the case for more people in WWE, because I feel like there are a lot of people that should be the case.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just no denying, like, phenomenal is too accurate to describe it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he's a worthy pick on our Mount Rushmore. So, Mark, let's go back to you for your third pick.
All right. So, my number three, and this one might surprise you guys, is the Great Muta.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. In my research, I was looking, and I always liked the Great Muta as a character, Great Muta, Keiji Muto. In my research, I discovered that in his four New Japan title reigns, he defended the title, I believe, the third most amount of times, which is 19 total defenses, with a total amount of days as champion at 1235.
Wow.
And he also has three All Japan World Championship reigns, not as long, I think, combined was at 547 with six defenses, and he also has a lone NWA championship reign, which I think goes unnoticed by a lot of people because he wasn't that well featured in America, I think. But yeah,
the Great Muta was we didn't even realize this until we researched it for a different episode. But that was, the Great Muta was actually a WCW invention. That was a character designed by WCW.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in New Japan, especially where he spent most of his career, he just went by his name and mm-hmm. just was just a very vicious guy in the ring, and one hell of a wrestler.
And you don't get many wrestlers who cross that divide in Japan of being the very best in New Japan and the very best in All Japan. Especially when he did it, there was still a lot of political tension between the two companies.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. So yeah, it's a great pick.
It's a great pick. I wasn't aware he'd won the NWA title. So
no, again, same. So yeah, right, it does go unnoticed.
Yeah, it's just a single reign, I think. It wasn't very long. I would have to look it up again, the number of days, but I don't think it was like even over 100.
They all count.
Yeah.
Even Kane's one day.
I mean, yeah, Kane is a former WWE champion.
So, Paul, now this pick is not at risk of veto, so who are you throwing on our Mount Rushmore?
Oh, it's my turn again.
It is.
It is, okay. Right. You see, I'm following a trend here. Can you guess who it is based on my trend?
It's going to be Kurt Angle, I think.
Oh, it's close. It's close. It's Brock Lesnar.
Oh, I should have known.
Yeah. I've gone for Brock Lesnar. Because he's just a once in a generation, probably a once in a lifetime athlete. I think he's an incredible asset to wrestling. And not only is he a multi wrestling company champion, but he's a multi everything champion. Amateur wrestling champion in 2000, UFC heavyweight champion in 2008, as well as an 8-time WWE heavyweight champion. And like I said, following the trend. An IWGP, I really struggle to say that, IWGP heavyweight champion as well. Undefeated as well, of course, because he didn't give the title back. we'll gloss over that.
And I think never defended it.
Did he not defend it?
I don't think so. Maybe one time. I would have to look it up again.
I don't think he did. He didn't defend it at all.
Wow. But like we said, they all count.
One and run.
Never defended it and never lost it.
He's the Conor McGregor of New Japan.
So those are the reasons I've gone for Brock Lesnar. Obviously, he's the youngest ever WWE heavyweight champion. Ender of the streak. There's The Undertaker popping up again. In fact, The Undertaker featured with all three of my picks. Beat Hulk Hogan for his final world title. AJ Styles was his final match, and Brock Lesnar ended the streak.
So it didn't just feature with him; he had really significant matches with him.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, like really, they all cheer winning the IWGP title and dancing with the Undertaker. <That's> it. Do you know how many times Brock Lesnar's been beaten in WWE on TV?
On TV, probably. It's a handful, I'd say five.
Oh, I thought my stat was more impressive than that. You've ruined it now.
Is it actually five? Wait.
No, he's lost 25 times. I thought that sounded low.
I have a stat for you because I actually looked this up recently. Do you know how many matches total Brock Lesnar has had since his return in 2012?
Oof. That's a good question. Let's say four a year. I'm picking up a bit. I'm sure he missed a year out.
You've got to count the money in the bank as well, because he was technically involved.
I'm going to go for a similar number, 26.
No, it's actually a little higher. It's like 65.
That's more than I would have thought. I remember long, long while ago when Paul and I were in a New Japan group DM, there was somebody comparing the reigns of Brock with the reigns of Okada and saying how they were comparable. And I think of the time that Brock had been in the WWF and been champion, Okada had wrestled like 11 times the amount of matches for that time. And he'd made like some like 30 times the amount of defenses, stuff like that. Really interesting statistics.
It is. Both reigns. I love both reigns. Completely different things, but I love Brock's reign almost as much as I love Okada's reign.
If you compare like Brock Lesnar's run in WWE since he first came back in 2012 to like the number of matches that Seth Rollins has had total in that time, Brock Lesnar's really only been working like 3 years in a span of 8 years.
And making way more money than Seth Rollins.
Yep.
You can't fault the guy. You really, really can't. As an amazing a wrestler he is, and I honestly do believe the wrestling world will miss him when he retires, he's an excellent businessman. He knows his value, and he has absolutely rinsed WWE for every penny of it.
But he adds 10,000 tickets to the attendance.
Yeah,
he genuinely does.
Totally agree. And when he's on the show, he adds 200,000-300,000 viewers. So he is money.
Yeah, I think it's only him and Cena are the only people in that category who can shift tickets that way just by naming them.
Yep.
And of those 25 losses, basically, if you beat Brock Lesnar, you're going in the Hall of Fame, or you're Billy Gunn.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a dig. That is a dig.
I think he is in the Hall of Fame, isn't he? On a technicality.
With DX, I think it's.
Yeah.
Technically with DX, yeah.
Yeah, because weren't Triple H like slagging off AEW in front of his face whilst he were in the ring?
So I think Brock Lesnar's career is going to be kind of unrivaled, really. I see him as like Andre the Giant Plus. He's got that kind of aura. If you beat him, you're serious business.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I'd agree with that.
Yep, I would third that. So go on, Matt.
No, I was just gonna say, like, and if he was around like as much as he is and just never won a title, I wouldn't mind. Like him winning the title and then never being around is kind of what makes me not like him. But when he's around and he has like good matches with like I want to see him face Bobby Lashley, just not for a title.
Yeah, I can understand that, but I do like him when he is that dickhead champion where he is holding the company to ransom, because when he does get beat, it means so much more.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So, Mark, let's finish your Mount Rushmore off with your final pick.
All right, so my final pick, and like originally it was AJ Styles, so I changed it to Kurt Angle. So Kurt Angle is technically a six-time champion in WWE, four times WWE, one time world heavyweight, and if you count the WCW title, because he did win it in WWE. And as far as like his TNA reigns go, he has the most combined reigns as TNA champion ever. I believe at six reigns and over 1,100 days. So, and he also won the other version of the IWGP championship that was in Inoki Genome.
Mm-hmm.
Which he, unified with the current IWGP title when he lost it to Shinsuke Nakamura. But he held it for, I believe, a long time, like 230 plus days. So, I mean, and come on, he's an Olympic gold medalist.
The best title you can win.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great pick. It was actually going to be my next pick, but I'll play the same game as you, and I'll go with a different one. I mean, Kurt Angle is an absolute legend, and the fact that he's still recognised as a WWE guy when his TNA run was arguably more prolific and a lot longer.
I believe 11 years to 5.
Yeah, really.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah,
so almost double.
It's like significant. Like, yeah,
his TNA run was brilliant.
Well, he was the guy there. There was nobody better than he. There was never anybody better than him. Arguably, than maybe AJ Styles over there and Samoa Joe. Like, those were the top three guys over there for the longest time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I loved his feud with Desmond Wolfe, who's obviously Nigel McGuinness.
Yeah,
they had two incredible matches.
That was a hell of a feud, but like his feud with Samoa Joe when he came in was like peak TNA.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
And lest we forget the time when he held literally every title that TNA ever had,
including the tag titles by himself.
Yeah, absolutely outstanding. He went for the Ultimo Dragon look.
And you know what I found funny, because I actually found this out in a YouTube show. There was like three other people who held the tag titles by themselves in TNA. I don't remember. Really? Yeah, I believe Samoa Joe was one of them. And there was, I think, one or two others. But I just heard this recently in another podcast. But yeah, so he's got that on it. Like the only person, one of the only people in probably any federation to hold tag titles by himself.
I mean, even Braun Strowman had to share his with Nicholas.
Yeah.
Arguably, he wouldn't have won it without Nicholas.
Yeah, that is very, very true.
That just got him over the line.
I mean, he really threw Cesaro off his game.
Well, it's an outstanding... Kurt Angle is an outstanding pick, and like I said, I was going to put him forward for hours, but I'll switch it up. Paul, who do you think I'm going to switch it up for?
Have we done the usual Badlands where we've both ignored the obvious answer because we thought the other one was going to go for it? Or are you going to save our Rushmore and go for Ric Flair?
I'm definitely not going for Ric Flair. I did actually avoid Hogan and Flair because I knew you'd at least pick one of them. No, come on. We all know who I'm
going to
go for.
I know you're going for the Ayatollah of Rock and Roller.
Definitely. I'm going for Chris Jericho. Without a doubt, the greatest wrestler that has ever walked the face of the earth. 30-year career. What titles has he not won? I mean, obviously, he started as a cruiserweight, winning titles in WCW, won the television championship in WCW. But it wasn't until he crossed over to the WWE in 1999 that he kind of propelled into that world title scene. Even then, though, it still took him quite a while. Vince wasn't as sold on Chris Jericho as the fan base were. But even then, he's a record holder of Intercontinental titles. He's a two-time WCW world champion, obviously the WWF invasion version, three times world heavyweight champion, and he'll go down in the record books as the first ever undisputed WWF champion. Obviously, then he went on his travels once he left WWE, had stints in New Japan where he basically fought dream match after dream match after dream match, picking up even the Intercontinental title over there in New Japan. But then he's made his home in Jacksonville now, and he was the AEW, the inaugural AEW World Champion. So yeah, I'm gonna have to go with my boy, the Le Champion, little bit of the bubbly, Chris Jericho.
You can't argue that one. He almost fits my category. He won the Intercontinental title in IWGP, so that's, you know, that's good enough for me.
So he's technically a 10-time Intercontinental Champion.
I think he has his t-shirt out saying 10-time Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Trying to work out, when was Jericho's first WWE title? Was it
December 2002?
Yeah,
he'd been there 2001.
He'd been there a while because he entered into that feud with The Rock straight away, but I think Vince got cold feet pretty quickly, and he quickly dropped down the card, then obviously made the RC title his own for a long while.
Yeah, I mean,
so I was saying Hogan's the gap between Hogan's title reigns 1984 and 2002. That's 18 years. So Jericho's must be the same between his first world title and the AEW title. Yeah, it's 18 years as well.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And you know what was really like upsetting about his first title reign was like he went into the main event of WrestleMania that year, and like the feud, and he was like the afterthought in the feud. He was the champion going into the main event of WrestleMania, and the feud was Triple H versus Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will never forgive WWE for that.
And then even if you look at the way he won the titles, beating basically the two biggest stars in wrestling at that time, with The Rock and Stone Cold, than to be buried by Triple H.
Yep.
So,
it happens to the best of them.
See, I almost put him on my list, but the reason that I didn't is because of how young AEW is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted to just because he's Chris Jericho, but AEW has only had two champions. And yes, he was the first, but it's like, I didn't want to be like, I thought it was not wrong, but it just didn't feel right putting AEW champions on this list yet for me. I felt like it was too early. So I was going to put Jericho just because he's Chris Jericho. But then I was like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
But he is Chris Jericho.
I understand that mindset. It's wrong, but I understand. No, I do get what you mean. It's sometimes when companies are like this, you can kind of almost think that they're going to be a flash in the pan. But I think they've got enough of an infrastructure there that they're in it for the long haul, I would have thought. And the fact that they rose from pretty much nothing to be the second biggest company in the Western Hemisphere, and Jericho was front and centre of that. I think if they didn't have Jericho, I think we'd be seeing a very different AEW now than we are doing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Definitely, yeah. It depends on your definition of major company, doesn't it? Like you said, they don't have that title prestige yet because only two people have held it, but they are they are pulling 1 million viewers a week. So,
and like,
so I think it is a major company.
Sorry. And I even, I discussed this topic with a friend of mine because I told him that I was coming on here. And he told me that including TNA felt wrong because TNA hasn't been on a national stage in a while. They're kind of just featured on local channels or like channels that aren't offered everywhere or on Twitch, which is not really, it is national, but it's not like TNA's not at the level it once was. But I felt like TNA's been around for almost 20 years now. Mm-hmm. They have established history. They've established. So that I comparing that to AEW. AEW's only in what, year and a half now, or no, 1 year, if you really think about it, because their first pay per view was May.
And the first show of Dynamite was October, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. So that's why, TNA, even though they're not really on the level they once were, they're still considered national company. And yeah.
Yeah. I think if a company has ever been considered second to the WWE, which I think TNA was for a number of years, then yeah. I think they have a right to be called a major company.
Yeah.
Regardless of where they are now, because obviously WCW is doesn't exist anymore, so we can't apply that logic.
Yeah.
And if you look at the actual TNA champions that we've picked with Sting, AJ Styles, and Jeff Jarrett, obviously, and Kurt Angle, they were champions when TNA was a lot bigger than it is now, when it was had a much more of a presence. So I think a lot of it comes down to when you were the champion of that particular company, whether it means more or not.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Was TNA as big as AEW is now? That's a genuine question, right?
Well, I mean, at one point they were on Spike TV, on a national stage on Spike TV. They tried to move to Mondays at one point when Hogan was there. That ended like after a month, but
I mean, they've always been move. Huge over here. TNA have always been really huge in Britain. I remember reading an article about them a while ago, where even when the TV deals were not cutting the mustard in the US, they made massive amounts of profit by touring Britain. Because they'd sell out shows, even they'd sold more tickets at Manchester Arena than WWE did.
Yeah. Yeah, they really had, like, their peak was really, like, 2006 to 2009. It started to go downhill when Hogan went there because they tried to be WCW 2.0 and feature Hogan and Eric Bischoff as top talents, when that was the wrong thing to do. I mean, you at that point, you got Hogan in his, 50s, all these back surgeries, he can barely move, and you had him wrestle Sting, and that was really bad. And, like, it was just, like, they tried to, like, recreate, like, the NWO in a way. They tried to do a takeover deal with Hogan and Bischoff, and people started to turn it off because it was like, I've seen this before. You're mm-hmm. just, you're doing exactly what WCW did and not featuring and not giving guys like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe and all these guys that are here that should be your top guys the spotlight. And now that they don't have national TV, they have to feature new people, and it's very hard for them to get back to that stage.
And to be fair, though, I think that started in TNA a little bit even before Hogan and Bischoff got there. I remember when they did the main event Mafia, where those guys absolutely run roughshod over a lot of the younger talent to the point where it was getting, like I said, very WCW. Like, it was almost like a rehashing of NWO.
Yep. Yeah. I find kind of Impact's status at the moment really weird, because it seems to be a lot of focus on them around the big pay-per-views, and a lot of where it looks like they're going to pop again, and then as soon as that pay-per-view's gone, I don't hear anything for months, and then the next big pay-per-view comes and everyone talks about it.
Well, most recently, especially with all of those like April releases in WWE, they were promoting that people were coming in. Like, they actually put out like a video package that featured Gallows and Anderson and Rusev. And like people that left WWE that didn't sign with them yet. So they put all this fanfare into the fact that, oh, you better watch our pay-per-view because former people are going to show up. And Gallows and Anderson were treated, and when they did officially announce that they signed, they were treated as like the main event because they didn't come out until the very end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, one of their surprises was Eric Young, which is cool because it's Eric Young and he deserves some kind of spotlight, and TNA was his brand, but that wasn't really surprising to me. That was like, oh, okay, Eric Young just wants to be on TV because he's good and TNA likes him, which makes sense.
Yeah.
As soon as you see, Eric Young get released, you assume he's going to go to Impact, don't you? Because he's got all that history there.
Yeah.
And I think some of the problems with Impact, I know from my point of view, is they build up a bit of buzz and they'll really hype somebody, and then that particular talent who they've really got behind does something ridiculous and kind of shoots the company in the foot. If you remember, they put the title on Austin Aries, and then when he had to drop the title, he just literally got up and walked out of the company, never to be seen again. Then they put the title on Tessa Blanchard, and everyone was like really impressed. This is a woman with a genuine world title facing off against the men, and she ends up being another massive racist and kind of holds the belt hostage. So sometimes they just can't seem to get out of their own way. They kind of like make these decisions that have great intentions and can maybe like make a big impact in the wrestling world, and then they trip themselves up.
Yeah. Well, they don't learn lessons because like you say, Hogan and Bischoff and NWO had all happened before and it didn't work before. So why is it going to work now? And Austin Aries had taken his ball and gone home from WWE. So why wasn't he going to do it at Impact? They're not learning lessons from other companies.
Yep. And I mean, like, again, like you said, like, I mean, Aces and Eights was bad. That was their NWO. It was bad. They, like, just recently, like, they made Eddie Edwards the champion again. Nobody's excited to see Eddie Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, I mean, like, Eddie Edwards doesn't even look like a champion. He goes to the ring and he wrestles in jeans every week. Like, he doesn't look like the face of a company. So when you make that your face of the company, it's like, you want me to be excited about this?
Yeah.
Like, when you got, like, I mean, right now it's kind of hard to say who their top faces really are, and that's the problem. Gallows and Anderson are being treated like big deals over there. Like, they are the faces of Impact right now. Like, and that's, I mean, that's good for them, but it's not good for the company,
no,
if you really think about it.
Yeah, you know, one person to put up forward as this is the face of our brand, this is our champion.
Yeah.
Absolutely makes sense. So after that slating of Impact Wrestling.
We started praising them, didn't we?
Started a whole nother show. I'm sorry.
but absolutely really enjoyed having this topic. What we need from you now, Mark, is a topic that you'd like to hear a guest discuss for a Mount Rushmore. What kind of topic would you like to hear about?
All right. So I actually thought about this one for a little while too, because I didn't want to be like that person that's like Mount Rushmore of SummerSlam main events or something like that. Like, even though that's an interesting topic, like I wanted it to be something interesting. So I actually thought of a good one. Mount Rushmore of crossover athletes. So basically, like, anybody who like came from other sports that had good runs in wrestling.
Interesting. We've had a specific MMA one before, but I don't think we've covered like the whole gamut of other sports.
No, we've not. No, that'd be an interesting one.
We've had quite a few interesting ones recently. We've had the Mount Rushmore of wrestlers who wear denim. We've had the Mount Rushmore of underrated pyro. That's to come up soon. The guests are really turning it up with these really interesting topics.
Making it challenging. I like it.
Yeah, same.
This will be a fun one to research as well. Because off the top of my head, I can't think of many who are crossovers, but I know a lot are, but I don't know who they are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. instantly, I'd say someone like Mark Miro, who come across from being a boxer. Obviously, I think we should avoid dipping into the MMA pool because that's a little bit easy. Let's too make obvious. It a little bit challenging.
Let's ban MMA, yeah?
Too obvious. Yeah.
Okay, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
So, Mark, let the Badlands listeners know where they can find you on social media and where they can find your writings and your audio about wrestling.
All right. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at MikeJC821. And my website is MikeJCOnWrestling.com, as well as look out for stuff on SLTD Wrestling. As I said, I do the features on AEW over there, and I usually post the audio on the website too. So, usually get the audio over there as well.
Yep, that's awesome. So go and give Mark a follow. Go and check out his content. Paul, your favorite time of the week, sir.
Yeah, check out Mike's content, and I'll tell you where you can find all the rest of our content. Particularly Darren's. Do you go by Darren or Mags? I always call you Darren, but I fear people don't know what I'm talking about.
I know the story about that nickname is just—it's going to be in the annals of wrestling Twitter time.
when the book comes,
I answer to everything.
Yeah,
dickhead. That's what the wife normally calls me.
Well, yeah, I didn't know his name was Darren. So there you go. I knew him as Mags.
Well. Mags, you can follow him anyway at Dej Kirkby if you want to, dickhead. You can follow me at Rain Counter, and you can follow us both at Badlands Pod. Darren Mags got loads of other great content out there. You can find him talking about wrestling fandom on Why We Watch podcast. You can hear him talking about MMA. Particularly UFC on the Five Rounds Pod, and you can find him chatting about anything he likes on a week-to-week basis on Talk at the Table. All of those are available if you type in Visionaries Global Media into your podcast engine of choice. You can hear more of me at Five Nerds Go again when we could be bothered to record anything. There's a back catalogue there. Go check it out if you fancy going back and listening to kind of a formative Mount Rushmore take shape. We've got a good number of our classic podcasts over on Smart to Death Network. And obviously, if you like what you hear and you need a bit more Badlands every week, we're sorting you out every week over on the Cheershot Radio Network. Also follow at Cheershot Media. And log on to the cheershot.com where you can find more hard-hitting pro wrestling opinion, analysis, news, and more. As always, everybody, hope you enjoyed it. Stay safe and always use your head. We'll be right back.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.